Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. Along with Matt Eddy, I'm John Manuel, coming to you from the Baseball America podcast nook. We want to remind you that you can go ahead and get your orders in for our 2012 books at baseballamerica.com, the Baseball America store. Get your copy while supplies last. Choose from the Prospect Handbook, the Almanac, the Directory, our Draft Almanac, the Super Register, all available at baseballamerica.com/store. And also available there is a subscription of the magazine and or a subscription to the online product, all of which contains the nuggets of goodness that you hear on this podcast writ large on the written word and on the written page. Matt Eddy does a lot of that for us. So, Matt, you handle our AAA page, our classification page, every issue, and nobody knows the rules and procedures of Major League call-ups like you do. So we want to talk a little September call-ups, kind of the ones that were the most anticipated, some of the ones Matt, not as much activity as you might have thought, but it seems like in some cases, a lot of these organizations actually are letting their AAA guys play out their minor league seasons, especially where there's playoffs involved, with a couple of exceptions. That's a little bit surprising. It used to seem like September 1st, teams just went to 40 players or 35 or something like that and went all out, and just scanning through the rosters, we didn't find too many teams that have done that yet.
Yeah, that's true. And you look in the International League, and it looks like Durham is going to keep its club largely intact. They called up Brandon Guyer, the Rays did, when I say they. But they left behind Matt Moore.
Chris Archer.
And Russ Kanzler, International League MVP, who the Rays signed on the minor league free agent market last year. And given the year that he's had, has a pretty good chance of being promoted, actually, for his first big league time.
One would expect. And, you know, just that International League playoff race, for example, they're being chased by Gwinnett, and the Braves did call up Julio Teheran, correct?
Not yet.
September 1st?
Not yet.
I guess when they get eliminated, we would expect Julio Teheran to go up.
Mm-hmm.
That team has already lost Mike Minor to the big leagues because of, obviously, injuries with the Braves' rotation.
Mm-hmm.
While Gwinnett isn't, probably isn't going to the postseason, that Gwinnett roster might have as much of an impact on the playoff race as anybody, because Jose Constanza, another six-year free agent,
yep, that's right,
has gone up and gotten playing time and become kind of a controversial big leaguer almost, because he's taking at bats away from Jason Hayward. At least that's the perception among Braves fans who are irate that Jason Hayward doesn't play every day, as messed up as his swing is right now. And then you had Vizcaíno. Aroldis Vizcaíno has gone to their bullpen and given,
yep,
them important innings. And then Mike Minor, an important part of their rotation with the injuries they had to, first to Jurgens, now to Tommy Hansen, and I'm missing somebody else who's hurt.
Beachy was hurt for a while
That's right. So who else on the National League side? So we've already seen impact with the Braves. I expect, now did the Phillies go ahead and call up Dominic Brown yet or not?
Not yet. Lehigh is positioned. They are positioned to make the playoffs, yeah.
He would probably be the only actual prospect that Lehigh Valley would send up, correct?
It's a veteran team, yeah.
That's a good way to put it. Who else among National League clubs kind of intrigued you among September 1st call-ups?
Well, going to the Pacific Coast League, going to the MVP in that league, Brian LaHare gets his second taste of the big leagues. He was up with the Mariners in 08, I believe. Didn't hit very well, but if you take that OPS plus that he had back then and applied it to this year's Mariners, he looks a lot better. Anyway.
There a chance? Could he be another Mike Karp? I mean, Mike Karp's a guy who'd been up, wasn't ever really an elite prospect. I think he might have made a Mets top 10 one time.
Karp, yeah.
So he was a guy, never really controlled the strike zone, became a minor league free agent. This year he's become one of the better hitters for the Seattle Mariners. I'm not sure how much that's going to last, if it's for real or not. Mike Karp certainly looks for real, though.
He
looks like he could be a productive player.
Yeah, Mike Karp.
Could Brian LaHare be that kind of guy?
You know, I think LaHare could be maybe a Garrett Jones kind of guy, somebody a little overlooked. You know, because the big knock on him when he was coming up with Seattle was, well, he hits doubles. He had like 45 one year.
Right.
But where's the home runs? He was hitting 12 in the PCL, but now he's hitting 38 this year, and he leads the minors.
And that's at Iowa, not in Reno or one of the really offensive ballparks of the PCL.
Yeah.
That's an intriguing choice. Now, he's in Chicago, correct?
So they called him up, and, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but they don't have a fixed first baseman for next year, do they, the Cubs?
No, Carlos Peña's on a one-year deal, and you know, there was talk about them moving him at the waiver wire. So, yeah, why not evaluate him? It's not like, hey, I'm sure Alfonso Soriano won't mind giving up some of his playing time unless he has some incentives he has to reach in left field. I remember LeHair being a guy who played for the for Team USA. I don't remember if it was in the World Cup or if it might have even been the 2008 Olympics.
Yeah.
I think he might have been on that Olympic team.
He's the pride of Worcester, Mass.
I think of that as the Jason Don Olympic team. I think most people think of it as the Steven Strasburg Olympic team, seeing as how he was the Shaq of that, or the Christian Laettner, I guess, of that team. Christian Laettner, the problem is that Strasburg, the college guy, was the most talented player on the team, as opposed to the pro guys who were on that team. I think LeHair might have been on that club. He's just like a perfect guy, especially for a manager like Mike Quadi. Mm-hmm. To be the perfect manager to give this guy, okay, we're going to run you out there 20 times in September. How much do you think a September evaluation of a player like Brian LeHair tells you?
That's a soft division. He's going to be facing the Astros and the once competitive Pirates.
Right.
So, I don't know.
I like your Garrett Jones comp, though. That was a guy who was a good, productive minor league player who really never got a shot until he got to Pittsburgh. And he's been a useful player.
Mm-hmm.
So, really, for a lot of these guys who are quote-unquote 4A guys, it really seems like the difference between being a 4A guy like a Phil Hyatt, I know he's a right-handed hitter, and maybe having a career like a Garrett Jones, or there was somebody else who just came to mind who went in and out of my head, but a guy who got like a Garrett Jones who got an opportunity and stuck, made it work, or Ross Glode is who I was thinking
of. Ross Glode, yeah.
Ross Glode's been in the major leagues now for a long time. He's
going to
get a pension.
That's right.
What do you think the difference is between having a Ross Glode kind of career and being a guy who gets stuck in AAA like we saw here in Durham, a Chris Richard?
Well, LeHair, he's hit, more than 30 home runs in the past 2 years. In each of the past 2 years, he's only 28.
That's a big part of the difference.
He was athletic enough to kind of play a little bit of left field
for
Tacoma, but I don't, he's playing first base only these days.
Seems like trading some of that athleticism, though, for better power is a trade that all those players should try to make.
Yeah, yeah.
Which probably indicates why so many have used performance enhancers in the past. So we're going down a road that we just don't want to follow. Who else in the National League kind of piqued your interest among guys who got promoted?
The Brewers calling up Logan Schaefer. I think that's interesting. Here's a guy who's missed most of the last 2 years with injuries, a myriad injuries. But he's a guy who can really play center field. He bats left-handed. He's a perfect guy for Milwaukee. They need a top-of-the-order guy who can hit lefty.
Right.
Like, next year's Nigel Morgan, essentially, is what they need.
That's a great point. He's a guy they've really indicated steady interest in the last couple of years. Like
yes.
You said, he had a good year in the Florida State League a couple of years ago.
Batting titleist.
Was he a batting titleist in the FSL? Went to Cal Poly, if memory serves. I remember at that time and in the Brewers organization, the comp on him has always been Steve Finley. That he's a slender slasher type with really good defensive chops in center field. And, of course, Steve Finley hung around the big leagues long enough that he figured out how to hit home runs.
That's right.
Now, there could have been something else going on there, too, the era that he played in. But Logan Schaefer, I don't think the Brewers are any misconceptions that Logan Schaefer's a power hitter. I had to think of him as a slasher, a line drive guy, and a defensive center fielder. And probably his return to health, I know he turned a triple play this year where he had a caught with a line drive off his head basically in center field and made a nice catch to start a triple play. Would seem to fit for them, like you said, for next year. Maybe good insurance for them this postseason. That's a team we think is a postseason lock. Only they just got swept by the St. Louis Cardinals as we record this, and their lead shrunk to 7.5 games. They didn't call up Willy Peralta yet, though, did they?
No, and they may or may not. Let's see, Nashville is not going to make the playoffs.
Okay.
So if they're going to call him up, they probably would do that. The rotation's set. They got five guys they like.
Right, everybody's healthy.
They wouldn't need him for the playoff roster. They did call up Martin Maldonado, a strong defensive catcher.
Best defensive catcher in the Southern League, a finalist for Baseball America's Captain's Award.
That's right.
Our first award on the minor league's best defensive catcher.
Don't expect him to ever hit. He's just going to be like Humberto Quintero, probably, offensively.
I think he threw out 52% of opposing base dealers.
But excellent, excellent defensive player.
And especially if down the stretch of the year they maintain this lead and they're able to clinch early, give Jonathan Lucroy a couple days off and have a guy out there who can catch your starters, who can catch Zach Greinke so he broods less frequently than is usually the case. Go ahead.
I think there could be an interesting situation in Colorado if the Rockies call up Drew Pomeranz, which they seem to be angling to do. Pomeranz being the key player they got for Ubaldo Jimenez.
Right. They already called up Alex White from that deal, so that was White was already on a 40-man roster because the Indians have caught him up earlier this year.
Mm-hmm.
You also noted for the Cubs, I meant to talk about that, so they also called up Brett Jackson.
They did not. He's on
they
the,
did not call
he's
him
on the Jackson. AFL roster. Okay. I'm not sure what they're going to do with him.
Okay.
I'll
be interested to see why. Well, I'm surprised that he hasn't come up yet. Or like a guy like a Josh Vitters who had a good year and finished strong in August. It seems like September is a great time to evaluate those guys. Now, getting back to the rules and procedures kind of stuff we talked about, this year's Rule 5 draft, who needs to be protected in this year's Rule 5? Is it 07 high school?
07 high school, yeah. 08
college.
07
high school, 08 college. So 07 high school, your Josh Vitters was your
Josh
third
Vitter.
Pick
wow.
of that draft.
That's right.
So it's time. So if you're going to have to protect him in November anyway.
That's a good point.
Why not go ahead and call those guys up now?
That's a team that's trying to be sold, correct? Or do they find
I think
a buyer?
They did get sold. The Ricketts family's in charge out there now, yeah.
Just the financial aspect of calling a player up, you know, paying one-sixth of the the minimum.
And we're talking about the Cubs going across town with the good guys.
Good guys.
Now, the White Sox were one of the more active teams here, Matt. They called up Shane Lindsay, the Australian. They called up Addison Reed from the 2010 draft. They called up, right before September 1st, Donnie Lucy and Tyler Flowers because they have no healthy catchers anymore. I guess there's actually really Tyler Flowers. I think Lucy was up there. They called up Eduardo Escobar, which is a real surprise.
Yeah.
And no surprise, they called up their top prospect, Deion Viciado.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like Viciado, this is going to be one of those what-if games, I think, for White Sox fans. I'm sure they've already played it, Matt. Do you think the White Sox fortunes would have been any different this year if instead of going out and signing Adam Dunn as an offseason free agent, a move that seemed like a smart move at the time, a lefty compliment to all their big right-handed bats like Carlos Quentin and Pauly and supposed big right-handed bats like Alex Rios. Dunn seemed to fit in with them right now as a lefty bat, but he has fewer home runs now than Brent Lillibridge, who's about as big as his left leg.
Wow.
So, yeah, Lillibridge has more home runs. So, do you think the White Sox, could the good guys be closer to the White Sox if they just subbed in Deion Viciado for Adam Dunn all year?
I think that would have been a short-term win for them, but probably a long-term loss, because I think the development year in Charlotte really helped Viciado, because he got a lot better in AAA this year. If you just look at his 2010 numbers to this year, he's just better across the board, you know, better making contact, but drawing more walks, playing a new position.
You wrote about that in Prospect Pulse. The managers, when you did IL,
the managers loved him.
Were impressed with him.
I mean, that was getting votes for most exciting player for Deion Viciado.
Now, he was the most exciting player when he was 15 at the Pan Am Junior Championships when he first burst on the scene and then almost made the Cuban World Baseball Classic team as a 16-year-old for the inaugural World Baseball Classic. But now he's, what, 21?
22
years old. So I guess he was actually 16 for that 06 World Baseball Classic. Almost made that roster. Was on their preliminary roster, which was like he had to have 35 guys, 40 guys, whatever it was. So right-handed power, again, he fits right in with what they already have.
Yeah.
So you can see why they went out and got done. You can see why if any team should actually have Juan Pierre on their roster, it's the good guys. He actually makes some sense for them. You can see why they thought that Mark Tehan would work for them.
Yep.
Because he was a left-handed hitter. But if Deion Viciado were left-handed, I think he would have been in Chicago all year, and they never would have gone out to get Adam Dunn.
That's a great point. Because before this year in the minors, he didn't even hit right-handers anyway. So
Right.
So I think for next year he'll be fine, you know.
Addison Reed, though, and Eduardo Escobar, those are surprises. Did Escobar come up at all in the IL calls this year?
No, he didn't. It was a pretty good year for defensive shortstops, and that would be the area he would draw attention. You had Zach Cozart, Jose Iglesias.
Good point.
And others. But those are the big two.
For AAA, that's two pretty good shortstops. You don't get too many of those kind of guys. And Addison Reed is a guy I'm trying to think about.
Third round last year?
Yeah, now this was Steven Strasburg's closer.
That's right.
In 2008 and 2009. I don't think he's any relation to Mark Reed and Jeremy Reed. I'm just shocked that Addison Reed got to the big leagues that quickly. The one thing is there wasn't anybody blocking him, not in that organization. And he had a really nice year as a reliever in the minor leagues this year. He started off, though, in Kannapolis in the South Atlantic League, but 111 strikeouts, 14 walks, only three home runs allowed, two of those in Charlotte, where it's allowed, you know, not as big of a deal. And what the opposing batting average had to be, what, 150? 43 hits allowed in 78 innings?
This is the Dan Hudson career track right here. All four levels in 1 year.
The White Sox are such a weird organization, Matt.
They are.
A very unique organization. And I'm not sure that's a good thing. But it does make them more fun to talk about in some ways. Let's just hope Addison Reed, for their sake, doesn't pitch 30 times in the big league, because I don't know if they're going to have a top 10 otherwise. But it's also good for them that they're getting something out of Addison Reed from last year's draft, because Jared Mitchell had a pretty brutal 2011 season.
He did.
I believe he leads the minor leagues in strikeouts.
Has he? You know, you didn't mention Shane Lindsay, whom they called up. Either.
I didn't. I don't know how I didn't mention
the
Shane
Aussie.
Lindsay. Crikey.
Give us some backstory on Lindsay.
Shane Lindsay, this was funny. I Googled Shane Lindsay on our website and came up with, I guess it was 2005. I'll have to look that up. He was the number one prospect in the Northwest League as a Rockies farmhand. And Will Kimmy, the late, great Will Kimmy, well, of course he's not late, late of Baseball America. But Will Kimmy did the chat that year into the Northwest League rankings. And that was the absolute right call, and that was not exactly a big year for the Northwest League. Let's read that that top 20. Shane Lindsay, Donald Veal, Taylor Teagarden, Nick Hundley, Kung Fu Panda, Pablo Sandoval at 5. So again, we didn't rank Pablo Sandoval in the top 30 the year before he broke out, but we were on Pablo Sandoval. Luis Valbuena, Dan Griffin, who's nowhere to be seen, big league-wise, John Mayberry Jr., Ben Copeland, Chase Headley, and the rest of that list, personal cheeseball Marcus Sanders down to 13. The Giants ruined his shoulder. None of the rest of these guys even made the big leagues. And I was like, wow.
Justin Sellers, number 19. He made it.
Oh, he is. He's in the big leagues. I'm out with the Dodgers. You're right. You know, I don't even know my password by heart, so I'll never be able to access this with the scouting reports. But I looked at Will Kimmy's chat to see if there were other guys who should have been included, and the answer was nope. He got them all. You look back at the other guys people asked
about.
That's
the beauty of an eight-team league.
That's it. This was it. The guys who people were complaining about were pitchers like Brent Carter, Mark Madsen of the A's, Will Thompson. I mean, it just was not a good year for the league. Daniel Cart. But fastest to the big leagues was one of the questions. Lindsay or Veal? And Will Kimmy said, I'll take Lindsay. But Shane Lindsay's career interrupted since then by multiple shoulder injuries.
That's right.
But he did come back as a six-year free agent. The White Sox gave him a shot. And up to 98 at the AAA All-Star game this year, had a tremendous season. Just the numbers for Shane Lindsay, strikeout-wise, were great numbers. And I think he's a good story. He was a guy. He was a big prospect. I'm happy for, Will Kimmy, the late, great Will Kimmy, to be able to put Shane Lindsay. Yeah, we're going to be able to put an asterisk on that list.
That's right.
past big leaguers.
Of course, we could put one by Donnie Veal, too, by virtue of the Rule 5 draft.
That's right. But this one's a
legit one.
It is legit. So this year, he starts off. This is awesome. Our stats database starts off with Melbourne in the Australian Baseball League last winter, where he gave up 17 runs in 7 2/3 innings and walked 10. But this year, you know, command is never going to be his forte. Mm-hmm. 51 walks and 64 innings at AAA Charlotte, but 78 strikeouts, so 11 strikeouts per nine. And if there's any organization that's going to give a power arm like that a chance, hey, I would take my chances with the White Sox because Don Cooper's their pitching coach.
Yeah.
And he's pretty good.
He doesn't give up the hits, though, you know.
He doesn't. 28 hits allowed in 64
walks
innings.
Don't advance the base runners.
That's right. A walk is not as good as a single. 59% of his pitches for strikes, according to
The whip is manageable. It's 1.24 in AAA. You know,
it is manageable.
He just walks everybody. So.
And, you know, Sergio Santos has shown that you give Don Cooper a raw power arm and he's going to get something out of it. So maybe one day the White Sox will have enough buffer in the bullpen for them to wise up and put Chris Sale in the rotation where he belongs. But it's the Baseball America podcast with John Manuel and Matt Eddy. Matt, who else in the National League among the call-ups piqued your interest? Anybody of interest that you liked?
Absolutely. Let's talk about Brad Brack. With the Padres. 42nd rounder from Monmouth.
That's awesome.
Cal League pitcher. I don't know about pitcher
no,
of the year.
No, it was last year. I think he was the pitcher of the year.
He was something of the year in the Cal League.
43 or 41 saves last
year? Yeah, to match his draft round.
That's it.
So then he goes from AA this year right up to the big leagues. And What I thought was fascinating about Brad Brack's call-up, aside from his backstory, is he got called up on the same day that the Rangers called up Mark Hamburger.
That's right.
A non-drafted free agent from like a community college in Minnesota.
Yeah, something like that. So, was he originally signed by the Twins and then traded to the Rangers in some deal?
Yeah, for Eddie Guardado, I believe.
I think you're
right. So,
wow.
So these two guys, these guys here, you know, they
who are these guys? These
they're both fastball reliant right-handed relievers. Arm strength.
I like the name Mark Hamburger better. But I can tell you that last year Brad Brack pitched in the Futures game, in the Rising Stars game, I should say, in the Arizona Fall League. And he was Darren Sutton's pick to click. Wow. Not that Darren knows a whole lot about anything. He is the son of a big leaguer, and he does it. He is a broadcaster. He sees a lot of big league games. But being able to work a couple innings of that game with those guys, he loved Brad Brack. He loved the backstory. He loved the aggression. I think he may have talked to a scout who really liked Brad Brack. I don't think we like Brad Brack as much. But, again, you're looking for a reliever. He throws strikes, 12 walks all year in 72 innings. He misses bats, 94 strikeouts. I think it's unlikely that he's going to have anything more than a Luke Gregerson type of career.
Mm-hmm.
But there are worse careers to have than a Luke Gregerson type of career, mm-hmm. especially if you're a 40-plus round pick.
Mm-hmm.
So I like Brad Bragg.
Good story.
But I don't like him as much as Mark Hamburger.
Okay.
Sounds like Mark Hamburger has stuff. Up mm-hmm. to 97 miles an hour, decent slider. Again, I think his role is always going to be up and down setup guy, but non-drafted free agent of the big leagues, hard not to like those stories.
Yeah, within 4 years, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, Ryan Hanley, among domestic non-drafted free agents, who's the best big league non-drafted free agent right now? Is it Ryan Hannigan?
Probably Ryan Hannigan or Brandon Beachy, I would guess.
Oh, Beachy? It has to be Beachy.
So that's...
Sorry, Ryan Hannigan, it has to be Beachy. That's the best development story the last couple of years for me.
I got to hand it to the Braves.
From a NAIA third baseman to big league rotation in 2 years.
You know,
is
I think he had less projection than that. I believe he was a first baseman. I know that's third base is what people say in the major league broadcast, but I believe he was first base closer for Indiana Wesleyan.
That's just crazy.
It is crazy.
That's just tremendous scouting. I know in the American League, one of the things that jumped out to me as I was scanning American League clubs. Matt, we didn't have a lot of movement among American League clubs. You know, the only guy the Red Sox called up was Felix Dubront.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly the most anticipated September call-up was Jesus Montero. Yankees fans very excited about Montero being called up. He may not have been called up early had AAA Scranton not failed to make the playoffs for the first time.
Yeah.
Now, do you expect Dellin Betances or Manny Banuelos to get called up? I expect that Betances will... Banuelos will not because he doesn't have to be protected on the 40-man yet. Betances does. It would not shock me if he wound up getting a promotion. I mean, he pitched well down the stretch. What in the International League this year, what was your impression that people had of Montero? He was included in that article I believe you had with Viciado.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the numbers for Montero were the worst of his minor league career, but that just means they were merely good, mm-hmm. not tremendous. What's the general consensus you think on Montero as a player and the anticipation of it? What do you expect him to do? Can he help the Yankees down the stretch in September?
Well, his performance line this year suggests that he can help against left-handed pitchers. He didn't hit right-handers with the same authority he had in the past. I mean, it could just be a blip.
Could be.
To me, he seems like the sort of player who wasn't necessarily motivated this year.
Repeating a level is not easy for a 20-year-old.
No,
21-year-old.
I think he'll be a player who will be bigger in the better in the big leagues than he was this year. Maybe not as good right away as he was in 2010. But
do you think there's a what are the chances? What are the odds that he is Josh Phelps Part Two, a guy who's so big that at an early age he had the athleticism and flexibility, but the bigger he gets and just the older he gets, not that he's old, but the older he gets. The stiffer he is and the more difficulty he has in his premium right-handed breaking stuff, which he seemed to exhibit a little bit of in AAA this year.
Yeah, that's a possibility. It's not like the most traditional swing either.
Right.
He's not a traditional guy. You know, he might look more for somebody like kind of a lesser knockoff version of Carlos Delgado, I guess, if you're looking for somebody switching off catcher.
Yeah,
I don't think he's going to be as good as Delgado, but...
if he were left-handed, that would be...
Yeah, because he has the hand-eye coordination and that aspect of his game that... Maybe Josh Phelps didn't have quite to that extent.
That natural timing mechanism.
Yeah.
People talk about hitters are born, not made. If you believe that, then he seems to have that.
Right.
That natural hitting rhythm that makes you a player. And conversely, the only guy the Red Sox called up was Felix Dubron, who's already pitched. I guess he threw a pickoff play, throw off Mark Teixeira's knee. So he's already contributed for the Red Sox.
I would like to see the Red Sox give LeVarnway some more playing time. You know, if it gets to a point where they can, you know, have that luxury.
Speaking of guys who are 6'4" catchers,
I know that's going to be very interesting to watch he and Montero develop in the next few years.
It really is, because the Red Sox seem like they rescued Jared Saltalamacchia this year.
Mm-hmm.
They have a young, productive catcher. As he split time, but he still hasn't caught 100 games in a season, in a major league season. He's not going to this year, I don't think. Could LeVarnway push him off of that, or is LeVarnway better suited as a DH/catcher like we think Montero will be?
I know, that's so tough. I mean, is a team like the Red Sox going to commit to someone like LeVarnway as a backup catcher? Probably not.
Yeah, you certainly can't have a defensive liability behind the plate when you're in the same division as the Rays.
So it's not the kindest thing to say, but really only an injury to Saltalamacchia, I think, or a complete collapse.
A meltdown back to 2010.
Yeah.
Or 2009, Jared Saltalamacchia. It doesn't seem like there are a lot of other young guys who are really going to make an impact on a pennant race, Matt. You know, the Rangers also caught up Leonis Martin. That was slightly, again, before rosters expanded. We've talked a little bit about Martin this year. Cuban, defector, emigre, whatever word you want to use. Cuban got $15 million and a 40-man roster spot this year when he signed. Wasn't great at AAA. I don't think this is a guy who – I don't expect to see Leonis Martin – on their 25-man postseason roster, unless he's the 25th man.
Yeah, which is possible, because they're probably going to go down to 10 or 11,
right.
10 or 11 pitchers.
Right.
That opens up a space.
He's not an 80 runner, but I could see him being a defensive replacement pinch runner in the Fernando Perez mode.
That's exactly what he's going to be for this year, yeah.
I think he has a shot to be a regular
next year.
Maybe
your second lefty pinch hitter? I don't know.
Right. But, I mean, for them, it's not a full season, but if Nelson Cruz gets healthy, I would imagine that the Rangers, even at the end of the year, if he's fresh, you might have to see a lot of Josh Hamilton in center field, or David Murphy in center field, as opposed to Leonis Martin. I don't see Leonis Martin getting a lot of regular bats out there.
But he probably does take Bourbon's potential spot.
I agree. So. I think that ship has sailed for Julio Bourbon. Meanwhile, chasing the Rangers, Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, you've done their top 30, and kind of a guy that we've always been intrigued by, Jeremy Moore, getting his first promotion to the big league. What's the story with Jeremy Moore?
Four-sport standout in high school back in 05.
So Shreveport area, if memory serves.
Yeah, and he's taken a very, very slow trek to the big leagues, but put himself on the map last year with a big second half in the Texas League, and then a big showing in the AFL. He played pretty well for Salt Lake, showed a range of skills, you know, some contact ability, some extra base ability, steal some bases, play center field.
Right. I mean, I love those guys with the double-figure hits, double-figure doubles, triples, and home runs. I mean, he wound up, I know it's the PCL, but 24 doubles, 18 triples,
right.
15 home runs. It looks like a guy who stings the ball. When he makes contact, he makes hard contact, and he has the speed to make up for it sometimes when he doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess the whole question with him is going to be the contact, the swing and miss.
Yeah.
He cut down the strikeouts, but he doesn't really control the strike zone. Sounds like an angel.
He bats lefty, so he'll be somebody's fourth outfielder, you know.
And for them, I mean, let's face it, they already have four outfielders. Who knows what they're going to do in this offseason? With Borjos and Trout, for sure, are going to be there. We have Torrey Hunter in his decline, but he's come on down the stretch, having a respectable season.
Mm-hmm.
And what's left of the corpse of Verdun Wells, who I think we all know that was a bad contract. And we all knew that was a great trade when the Toronto unloaded him on the Angels. I don't think anybody saw this happening for Verdun Wells. I mean, it's a complete and utter collapse. I mean, it's not a great year by Torrey Hunter when you're slugging .423. But, I mean, the .755 OPS is probably league average in the American League this year. Verdun Wells, last I checked, had an on-base percentage of like .250, .252.
To .238.
His slugging percentage actually is pretty close to that of Torrey Hunter, which is shocking. Torrey Hunter, a .423 slugging and a .391 for Verdun Wells. But it looks like that's Jeremy Moore. They're going to have to, with these overpriced corner outfielders, Jeremy Moore's best case is being the fourth outfielder if they were able to get rid of Verdun Wells or Torrey Hunter.
Yeah, I think, he's probably slated for Salt Lake again next year. But, you know, it's only be a second option here.
Is Efren Navarro, who they also called up here, is he a factor for them at all? What's the story with Efren Navarro?
He did get recognized as a top defensive first baseman in the PCL.
Nice.
Let's see how he hit there.
25-year-old left, and yeah, he hit 317. He's not. Let's put it this way: he's no Mark Trumbo with a stick. He might have to wind up being Mark Trumbo's caddy. That'll be fascinating to watch what the Angels do next year. If Kendrys Morales comes back, A, I would imagine he'll be a little chubbier. B, he'll probably be a DH.
Yeah, if Abreu's gone.
That's what I'm saying. So what do you do with Bob Abreu? And Mark Trumbo ain't going anywhere. Unspoken, when we all these talk about the Angels, I haven't seen it come up much. Howie Kendrick having a tremendous season for the Angels. It's a big reason why the Angels have a chance to are still in this race. They're big three starters. I don't see Moore or Efren Navarro really making too much of an impact down the stretch here. You do also, you've done some Mariners rankings in the past. They kind of clean house a little bit here, I guess, Matt, in the last couple of weeks with Matt Mangini and Matt Tuiasosopo.
Yeah.
Tuiasosopo was what, a supplemental first round pick?
Third round pick. But their first that year.
I think his third round draft pick signing bonus record got beat this year by somebody.
Okay.
But, yeah, $2.29 million bonus. Now, they're going to re-sign him, I suppose, but he's off the 40-man roster. What happened in his career? Why did he, you know, a little bit off the 40-man subject, but what's your assessment of why the Tuiasosopo gambit did not work out for the Mariners?
Well, I guess the biggest thing is he just couldn't handle shortstop, and then his bat never developed like they thought it would, you know, because he's more of a two-sport guy in high school, right?
Right, he was a football guy. Definitely a football guy. So I mean, 25 years old.
Never really developed a feel to hit. You know, he hit some home runs at various stops, but never an eye opening number. And, you know, couldn't play short and couldn't hit like they expected. So
that was an amateur scouting department that made some spectacular misses early part of the decade. Michael Garcia Parra and Matt Tuiasosopo are two that really stick out as big dollar, high dollar guys who did not succeed.
And right on through Jeff Clement and Josh Fields, you know.
Yeah.
Fields not
the reliever.
Yeah.
Not the 20 home run now in Japan corner infielder. But they called up Sean Kelly, Chris Jimenez, and Cesar Jimenez. So we have our Jimenez double. But again, that's another – I think one of the things that we've seen here, Matt, is that most teams, if they had a guy who they thought could help them this year or they really wanted to evaluate, they called him up long before September 1st. How anachronistic do you think the deadline, this September 1st roster expansion is? Do you see that as being the kind of thing that might be addressed in a future CBA where they change those protocols? It seems like there is some movement for having September pennant race games not decided by bloated rosters.
Yeah, I mean, the one player development benefit of it is that you can evaluate a player and they still qualify for the rookie of the year the next year because those don't count as service. Those days don't count against their service time, but I don't know if that benefits the clubs in any way, except for a little publicity, but it probably costs you down the road.
Right. I hadn't thought about the publicity positives. I was trying to think, what are the positives out of that? Yeah. Getting a guy's feet wet under less pressure.
Yeah, I guess the thinking is a team will say, well, if this guy's going to factor for us next year, let's see what we have in September when, you know, the stakes are low, you know?
And at the same time, you have teams that say, hey, let's, you know, September evaluations really don't matter. You can't tell anything by September.
That's what Scott
said all the time. Exactly. Yes. So, but like the Dodgers, you wrote down Dana Evelyn. I saw he was pitching in Pittsburgh. I think that he's had some success there in the past.
What's notable about
him
is
they've already called up all their guys, like you said, like Justin Sellers.
What's notable about Evelyn is he survived Albuquerque. He actually had a pretty good year.
Did he really?
In one of probably the most difficult pitching environment in the high minors.
Matt, we mentioned AAA playoffs. Wrapping up this podcast, we've got your IL playoff picture pretty much set, PCL picture pretty much set, Triple A championship in Albuquerque this year. Who's your pick? I'm going to put you on the record. Who's your Triple A national championship pick? Last year it was Mike Sarbaugh and his Columbus Clippers.
They're always good, you know.
Pretty good this year, even without Chisenhall, Kipnis, again, Alex White. A lot of promotions and trades and that kind of stuff, and yet still a fine year for the Columbus Clippers.
Yeah, you know, well, they lost Jared Head.
That's
he got called up to
blow.
The Indians. So
another non-drafted free agent.
That's right. Add him to the list.
That's right. Put a star on that guy.
Mark Hamburger. You know, if Durham's big three is right, I mean, Matt Moore, Chris Archer, Alex Torres, they're going to be tough to beat.
Going to be hard to find better power pitching than that threesome.
They're, you know, who's going to close out the games for them?
I don't. Because right now, Rob Delaney is their closer. I guess, actually, Rob Delaney is their closer. They are actually a good playoff pick. I don't know who the PCL rotations are, but I can't imagine there's one that's got more. I mean, Alex Torres is a five-inning pitcher, but Durham is it's so ridiculous to say this. Their team constructed for the postseason. It is amazing to me.
Top-heavy roster.
Well, obviously we're too close to it because we go to a lot of their games. But it's amazing to see a AAA team with that kind of record when they've really not had five starting pitchers all year. The back end of the rotation has been filled out the last 2 years by relievers who masquerade as starters. Last year it was Richard De Los Santos, who pitched too many innings, so he blew his arm out and hasn't been healthy this year.
Brian Baker.
This year, Brian Baker, some last year too. Dirk Hayhurst, the most famous fourth starter disabled list AAA veteran in the minor leagues. They started Lance Cormier for a couple of games this year. They've had a Johnny Holstaff a lot of games, and yet they still have getting ready to win another. It'll be, I guess, the 11th time in 14 years they'll go to the playoffs as a AAA team, which is ridiculous. That kind of consistency in any level of baseball is admirable. So
they're definitely going to be stocking up for next year when the AAA championship game is in Durham.
What are the chances that I know that Matt Moore wants to pitch in Albuquerque. He's an Albuquerque guy. He's a New Mexico guy, I should say. Moriarty High School. He wants to pitch in the AAA National Championship. I don't think there's any other pitcher who can say that. I think Matt Moore is the only guy. Maybe Tyler Sturtevant, who went to New Mexico State. I forget where Tyler Sturtevant is pitching, but
maybe if Danny Ray Herrera gets traded again.
That's right. Maybe he would That's right, because Buffalo from New Mexico. Is not going there. Is what you're saying? You're saying Buffalo's not going to make the AAA playoffs?
That's what I'm saying.
You're not on that limb. But I would. I don't know who I'm picking. Who's the PCL favorite?
Yeah, you know the Rivercats are always tough, but you know they called up Josh Altman and.
Oh yeah, they did call up Josh Altman, Neil Wagner.
Their starting catcher, Anthony Recker, Jason Rice, whom they just acquired.
But they have Landon Powell, though, I believe.
They do have Landon Powell.
So the veteran.
And Chris Carter and Michael Taylor and Adrian Cardenas. That's a good team.
Wow, that's a loaded lineup.
That's a good team. They lost Jamile Weeks early on.
It did. But that's a pretty loaded lineup for a AAA team. And I think all the, you know, obviously your A's fans, maybe to coincide with the release of the Moneyball movie.
That's right.
Sacramento can win the AAA National Championship.
If only Nick McCurdy were their shortstop.
I think it's Josh McCurdy.
Josh McCurdy.
It?
No.
Whatever. Where's Brant Colomarino when you need him? Colomarino's got, can we say that on this podcast? Colomarino's got titties. We're saying it. And if JJ censors that from the podcast, that's fine too. Michael Taylor with a bounce back year a little bit this year with that fine 456 slugging. And I'm picking Durham. I'll pick Durham over those guys, over the Rivercats.
Expect Kanzler to go nuts, little Tim Beckham.
Do you like Russ Kanzler as a prospect?
I like what he's done this year. You know, he gives you a good at-bat. Hit some doubles. He doesn't really have over-the-fence power, you know, traditional home run juice, but...
I'm not sure if that guy's like an extra guy. He seems like a National League type of player.
Do you think, at this stage in Connor Jackson's career, who would you rather have? Connor Jackson or Russ Kanzler?
Russ Kanzler.
You know, they both play the same positions. Kanzler can actually play third base.
I was about to say, he can actually play third, which is a big difference.
You know?
Separator for him. For me, that's a separator. I thought I saw the stat a bit that Connor Jackson hasn't hit a home run against a left-handed pitcher in like a year and a half.
Wow.
Peter Gammons tweeted something out like that, or maybe he's hit one home run off a left-handed pitcher. So, yeah, I'd take Russ Kanzler.
Well, anything can happen in 2 months.
No doubt. Anything can happen in September, so we wanted to go over September call-ups a little bit, and me and Matt's the only ones in the office who are interested in AAA playoffs, so we wanted to cover that ground, too. We'll have another podcast next week. Next week, I think we have a couple of podcasts planned. One of them, an annual rite of the end of summer, Matt, when Aaron Fitt and I crank out a podcast going over summer college league cornucopia of prospects. I also expect that we're going to have a group, giant group pod where we go over our top 50 2012 prospects. We're meeting on that next week, so look for Nathan Rohde, Connor Glassy, and myself sitting around a laptop near you with talking 2012 draft prospects. And don't forget, every Sunday night, our podcasts are obviously a little hit or miss. We're going to try to rectify that in the future. But every Sunday night, the Baseball America Show, on Sirius XM, XM Channel 89, Sirius Channel 209, where J.J. Cooper and I and some other members of the staff from time to time take your calls and talk minor league baseball and prospects on the Baseball America Show. Thanks for joining me on the podcast today, Matt. Thank those of you at home for the download. We'll talk to you next time on the Baseball America podcast. Until then, so long, everybody.